I'm joined by the very lovely John Craddock. John, how are you? Thanks for coming in.
I'm fine, thank you. Good morning, Heidi.
Good morning. You are the owner, is it, of Craddock Estates there in Clontarf?
Yes, well, yes, I'm the owner, I suppose. My wife might say otherwise. She's the financial controller, so she's actually the boss, but I am the owner on the door.
Now, there's been a lot in the media. You're a long time there, actually, in Clontarf, are
20
you?
Years this year.
20 years. So 20 you've years seen the boom and the bust and...
And maybe the housing. Next boom and bust as well.
Do you think so, yeah? How many booms have you been through now? Or is that a personal question?
In housing, only one boom and one bust. But it's memorable. It's not something you forget too easy.
Yeah.
And at the moment, things had been busy, but they've gone a little bit quiet again. So I think people are taking a breath. But hopefully there won't be another bust.
Are people nervous, do you think, to... Is there still a bit of reluctance?
Buyers are wary of things going the same way they did before, which is prices screaming through the roof. And then, I suppose, putting themselves in a situation where they have huge mortgages and worrying about the future. So they have become, understandably, a bit more cautious. And over the last 8-9 months, prices rose at a reasonable rate, bearing in mind where they started from, which was down at 70% off the top of the market. They've now recovered by about 30%. And... maybe buyers feel that's enough for the moment, but they're slower to make offers and slower to buy. But property is still selling.
It's still selling, is it?
It is,
You, what area do you look after now, mostly?
The North Peninsula. So we would go out as far as Howth, over to Malahide, over to the Drumcondra Road, and then into the city. We stay on the north side.
Okay. Oh, yes. Well, it's the best place, really.
It is. It's the proper place to be. And we feel strange when we go over the Liffey.
Oh, very weird.
Yeah,
I don't
very,
like
very
it
strange.
At all. Yeah, I get tingles.
Absolutely. Up and down.
Now, it's been in the media an awful lot with this whole deposit thing. I can't remember you've to get a bigger deposit, is that it, on a house?
Effectively, what they've done is they have told the banks that they can no longer lend as much of a percentage as they did. So effectively they've dropped it by 5%, so buyers, first time buyers, have to come up with an additional 5%.
So say I want to buy a house for, I don't know, 200,000. It's a very small house. But what would I need then with this new legislation? What would I need?
I think you would need to have 20%, so that's 40,000. Plus the additional costs, such as solicitor's fees. So you would probably need to have 45,000 to buy a house, and that's without buying furniture or anything else. And people do say that it's huge and it will stop buyers. But in 1985, when I was buying my first house, that's the kind of money you had to have at that time. And in fact, mortgages were much harder to get. So in some ways, it's a return to perhaps more sensible figures.
Okay, so you don't think it's a bad thing? It's maybe not a...
Anything that, I suppose, keeps a check on the market is probably not a bad thing anymore. We don't ever want to go through what we went through again.
Well, it is pretty awful, I think, if you find yourself owing more money and you can't pay it.
Yeah, there are still a huge number of people with negative equity. There are people who will spend all their lives living in the same house with negative equity because their mortgages are so big that they'll never, in any practical way, repay them. And as long as they've got a job and they're happy to live where they are, it's not the end of the world because they only wanted to buy a house to live in. But it does mean that they won't have choices in the future. And that should never be repeated.
I do remember, actually... when I was little, there was no furniture in the house, in my parents' house. And I was born, and I was obviously old enough to notice that there was very little furniture. I remember wooden boards, chipboard floors. I think it took my parents a while to... I mean, they had the house, the structure. But I actually remember them taking a while to get curtains and
but that's the way things used to be.
Borrowing a telly and stuff.
When we got married, we got an empty house. There was curtains and there was floor coverings of some kind. There was no built-in wardrobes and it was the original kitchen. I think my parents gave us it was a cooker or a fridge freezer as a wedding present. And my wife's parents gave us a double bed and that was it. And the rest we had to either borrow from somebody or do without. And when we got the keys to the house and moved in for a couple of weeks, we didn't actually have any chairs. So we used to sit on the floor. And that was normal for the time.
It was normal, that was the thing.
But that's not normal anymore. When people buy houses now, they expect to walk in and have it fully furnished with at least two flat screen TVs and a proper central heating system, well insulated, modern kitchen, and nicely finished. And their expectations are very high compared to what ours would have been way back then.
So is this new mortgage thing maybe bringing the expectations a little bit...
No, I think it will just disappoint some people.
Oh, really?
I don't think people won't lower their expectations, but there will be disappointed people who will struggle to buy because of it. But I don't think it's not the mortgage that's the real problem now, it's the shortage of houses.
Really?
Yeah, it's a lack of affordable housing in the areas that people want to live.
Now, a shortage of houses is different to a lack of affordable houses.
No, it's the same thing, because the shortage is of affordable houses in areas that people want to live.
Okay.
So people want to live, if we talk about the north side, they want to live near the Dart Line. They want to live near the sea. That's their first choices.
Yeah, I want to live near the Dart Line, and I want to live nearly in the sea, actually, if I have
in the sea and on the Dart Line is an ideal choice. But that's where people want to be, and that's where most demand is. So that's where... the prices have risen most significantly, and there you have your shortage of houses.
Yeah.
And there isn't land in those areas to build lots more houses. So it doesn't matter how much money the government come up with to build more houses, that won't actually solve the problem.
Okay. So we have to build on top of the houses we've already got.
Well, now, I wouldn't even dare to say that, because there'd be somebody in Howth who'd be sending me a nasty letter tomorrow if I did. But the choices that the country has is that the government need to change their mind about encouraging people to live in cities and encourage them instead to live in the country.
Yes, of course, so decentralisation.
Well, it's more a case of reducing demand. I read somewhere last year that globally there is a trend towards moving to big cities, presumably for jobs and services, and that our government and our successive governments for the last 15 years have encouraged this, because they're trying to pull the multinationals in. They want to show them that we have well-educated, available staff close to where they're going to set up. And that tends to be close to urban areas. So as a result, everything that the government done has been to encourage people to leave the country and move to cities. And that's why you have over 1 million people living in Dublin and houses around the country that you can buy. There are two-bed houses for 25,000 in good condition. In the country.
Yeah. I always felt that was a bad idea years ago when they were starting the ideas of expanding the airport, because it was already very difficult to get into the airport. There's not too many roads into it, and you can only have so many airplanes, you know, flying over.
But it appears to be the way they think about everything, because we have the airport, we have the children's hospital, and again, all thoughts are putting them in Dublin
Central,
City.
Yeah.
But if you wanted to look after the people of Kerry, for example, it should be in the Midlands somewhere. And people in Dublin, of course, would have to drive to the Midlands, but if you were to be fair to all, it would make more sense. It would also reduce some of the demand for housing in Dublin, because consultants, nurses, doctors and ancillary staff would have a reason to move to the country, because there's jobs there.
Yes.
Which there isn't at the minute.
Okay, it's a big picture. It's more than just...
It's not just about local houses and local prices. There's a much bigger picture in all of this. And in fact, even the way house prices rise, people tend to think of it as being one market, but there's hundreds, if not thousands, of little markets, and the little markets drive the surrounding markets, and it's like ripples on a pond. When house prices rise in Clontarf, which would be one of the more popular areas on the north side, if you've plenty of money, house prices rise in Clontarf to the extent that they go to sync with Raheny and Artane. So all of a sudden, someone who wanted Clontarf, like me perhaps, for example, will buy a house in Artane. That's what I did. And I'm very happy in Artane. But because then the demand moves from Clontarf to Artane, that pushes up the prices in Artane. And then the prices move on to, say, Merino or up to Coolock. And bit by bit, like ripples in a pond, price increases just go slowly out. And then where they plan to build the houses on the very outskirts, the demand is at its weakest, and the increase in supply doesn't do anything to bring down the price of houses in Clontarf, because it doesn't work in reverse. If you put 5,000 houses tomorrow out on the far side of Blanchardstown, that will not affect the price of houses in Clontarf, because some people will buy out there, but a lot of people will look at it and think, that's too far from where I want to be. I'm from Coolock, my mom's in Coolock, I want to be beside her. I'm from Artane, my job's in Artane, I want to stay there. So people want to be where they're familiar, where they've been comfortable, where they've been brought up, with a few exceptions.
So is it still, I remember someone saying location, location, location.
It is, but when they were saying it, they were talking about the grand design, like the sea being beside you and, you know, having fields around you. For most Irish people, for most Dublin women that I've met, location is about being near their sisters, near their mum, near the things that they enjoyed when they were growing up.
Not men, no. It's only, is it mostly women?
Men don't actually have much say when it comes to buying houses, to be fair, if they're part of a couple. I don't view it as an awe. I think that's a perfectly reasonable arrangement to make. Because ultimately, of the couples I've met, the happiest couples are where the man didn't care where he lived, as long as his wife, partner, girlfriend was happy where she was living.
Oh.
So as a result, he went where he was told. She was happy. He was happy. It's a perfect arrangement.
That sounds great. What about men on their own, though? Where would they buy?
Well, that's different. They would have their own choices of where they want to live. And like everybody else, they would be driven by, in a lot of cases, though, it's what you're familiar with. If you were born in Howth, you will tend to want to live in Howth. Unless you hated the place for some reason, in which case you want to get away. If you were born in Coolock, you will probably want to live in Coolock because your family will be there, you'll have a circle of friends there, and you like what you know. You might consider going to Artane. It's a long way away from Coolock, but you might just consider it because there might be a bigger house down there that you fancy. But with each step, you'd be less and less inclined to move. I've moved twice. We started off, my wife was from Springdale Road, Glenwood Road in Raheny. We got as far as Woodbine in Raheny, and then at a real push I got her to Artane, to Brookwood, and that's it now. That's as far as we'll ever go. Because her family, her sisters and all were around her. And I found that to be true with most of the couples that I show houses to. Single guys would have a different, I suppose they have a different set of ideas of what they want, but typically they'd be buying in areas that they know.
Yeah, yeah. I did find, actually, strangely enough, my brother and his pals, they all moved to England at one point, and they all moved together so that they're all within reach of each other. I think it's one of the few cases where the guys do have have obviously had a bit of the say. They always seem to be around the corner from each other.
Yeah, I think sometimes guys think they have a say, but they're being guided by somebody else. Absolutely. They're being guided by friends, by their parents, by brothers, sisters, because for a lot of men it's not that important to them.
Yeah, possible that the wives got together and decided where they would move.
And if they're being clever, as wives often are, they're not going to talk about that.
They're
simply going to organise it.
Very good.
And let the fellas think they thought of it first, which is perfectly acceptable. And then they're very happy.
Oh, John, you're great. You're great. How did you get into housing? How did this start?
I knew you were going to ask me that.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's okay. I got into housing because I met estate agents who I felt didn't treat me very well. And I liked meeting people. I was a landlord before I became an estate agent. And I felt that you could do the job well and still treat people right. And that's how I got into estate agency. So my first experience with an estate agent was a gentleman who charged me a high fee but failed to sell the property. And afterwards we had a row over the sign because he charged me for the sign and I said I want to keep it. And he said, you can't have it. And I said, but you charged me for it. So in the end, I kept the sign and I didn't get the money back for the sign. But I then subsequently sold the property myself. And I sold it without any real difficulty and I wondered why he had failed to sell it. And from then on, it became something that I was interested in. I started doing courses with the IAVI. I started working part-time for someone else in the business and it went on from there. Once I got qualified, I opened up my own business and carried on.
Wow, you like it, obviously. I'm just looking. You mentioned the IVI. I downloaded some stuff.
Licensed by the IVI are no longer there.
All right.
The structure for estate agents now is that there is a regulator, the National Property Services Regulatory Authority.
Oh, yes.
So they issue licences to property service providers, is how they describe them. And that would include estate agents, letting agents, property management people. And they give you your licence. But I was a member of the Institute of Auctioneers and Valuers, and we merged 5 years ago with the Society of Chartered Surveyors. So now I'm officially a chartered surveyor.
Are you?
A residential chartered surveyor, I think is how they would describe me.
So would you actually go out and do surveys of properties?
No, I wouldn't, because I wouldn't think I'm qualified to do that. My background is in valuations, and my experience would be in property valuation. So while I'd be happy to value properties, and I'd know quite a bit about property construction, I wouldn't feel myself qualified to actually carry out surveys. So I don't do them. Even for people I know.
Yes, your John's licence number is 1311. I had downloaded it here. Just in case anybody would like more advice on properties, if they're thinking of buying a property, I have your phone number here. Is that all right if I give
that
out?
Yeah, absolutely. Work
it's
away.
833-0517, is that right?
That's right.
Yeah, 833-0517. Huge number of properties on your website for sale, actually, all different prices going from 90 up to over a million. These are all around the Clontarf area. It's amazing, actually. There's quite a broad variety of properties, isn't there, in the area? I mean, you can really get...
Well, there's a lot of properties in Dublin. Last year in Clontarf, there was 165 sales.
Really?
That's just in Clontarf. Again, now that we have a regulator, there's a register of property sales. And you can access all this information that's available to the public on the registrar's website.
And does it give the price of what
it's
sold at?
It gives you the address and the price of what it sold for. It started in 2010 and it's updated every month. It's usually 3 or 4 weeks behind, but it's updated every month. And it means that you can look up the sale price of any residential property that's been sold in Ireland since 2010 onwards. Which makes it very easy to get information for everybody on property values. But if you want to analyse the statistics, you can also see how many properties sold in any given area. You can see what the average price of a sale was as well.
Really?
So it's a handy tool. Yeah, we will have actually... We produce an annual newsletter. It will be out in about 2 weeks' time. And we include those statistics in the newsletter, the average price of houses in all the Northside areas.
So people can actually check their own house, their own street.
Yeah, we re-index it by road, so it's actually alphabetically by road. So you can look up a road and you can see what a house on your road sold for. The newsletter will be out. It's 2 weeks. It's actually in construction at the moment, but it'll be 2 weeks before it's finished.
I'd say that'd be very interesting. Now people will be very.
Well, it's handier than the register, because the register is not in alphabetical order. It's just in the order of sales as they happen.
Okay.
We rearrange the data into alphabetical order so people can look up their streets.
Excellent.
It makes it easier to read.
Oh, that's brilliant. Before we finish up, I'm going to... It's very sad, because I feel I'm enjoying this now. What are you doing for Valentine's Day, or is that a deadly secret that you can't let out?
Traditionally, we do very little for Valentine's Day, because my wife's birthday is on the 11th of February.
Aha.
And as a result, you throw all your energies into that.
So that was yesterday?
Yes, it was, leaving you totally exhausted. And
too much information.
Yeah, totally exhausted and sort of running out of things to do. And it's only so many bouquets you can give a lady in a week. So, but typically we will be together. Our children are grown up. We'll have the dog. May go for a walk. Can't see us going out for a bite to eat, but a walk is a distinct possibility. And maybe a few glasses of wine, be something simple.
Sounds lovely.
It's pleasant.
Yeah, very nice. John, thank you so much for coming in this morning.
It was nice to be here.
It's lovely to just talk about the properties as well, and to talk about things because it's very, it's quite intimidating sometimes when you're going for the first time for properties, and it's nice to know there's somebody nice to talk to about that. I have a song here, Joni Mitchell, which I'm going to play, and it does involve building. Thanks, John.